You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, powered by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera, Interstate Batteries has you covered. Visit your local Interstate Battery store today or online at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Welcome to the Transition Wild Podcast, the home for those looking for expertise and inspiration on all things Western big game hunting. I'm your host, Adam Parr, and you're listening to episode number 30, where we talk with Joe Humphreys and Jackson Riley on their 2018 Montana Mule Deer Hunt. Hello, everyone. How you doing? Hope you're having a great day. Hope you're out there hunting. Right now, it's middle of November. Well, November 20th when I'm recording this. I just got back from Oklahoma. I spent a week chasing whitetails and on public land archery, and I had an absolute blast. It was a really cool hunt. Shot a doe a couple days into the hunt, and I shot a small buck on the very last day I was there. I was stoked to get him. It was just really cool, man. I think I'm going to have to do a podcast completely dedicated to that hunt. I am going to do a blog article with, showing some of the pictures and, telling a little bit more of the story and, and talking about my, I was living out of the back of my truck and, public land, going in by myself, completely solo. Never hunted there before. So it was just fun, man. I that's something, if you can do it. I mean, I know a lot of people take hunting trips by themselves or with other people and, family, friends, group of couple buddies. That's fun too. But when you get to go and do it by yourself, it's got a different vibe. It's a different feeling. It's you and you only. You're just thinking about your next move only. You're not worried about, picking this guy up or if somebody else shoots something, you're dealing with that, which is all awesome. I love it, no doubt, but it's something different. And I think if you haven't done a solo hunting trip for a week, if you can do it, I totally recommend it. It's a different world. It's so much fun. And, I had an absolute blast. So look out for that coming out soon, a blog article and probably a podcast on the hunt as well. So, but while we're talking about that DIY public land today, we have on my good buddies, Jackson Riley and Joe Humphreys, and we're talking about their recent 2018 mule deer hunt in Montana. They went out there, for rifle season, had a general season tag, but I'm obviously friends with them, but, following them on social media and I'm kind of seeing the details of the hunt, and I see Joe post a picture of his buck, and then I see his dad post a picture of his buck like the next day, and then a couple of days later, Jackson's father-in-law posts a picture of his buck, and then finally Jackson throws up a picture of a buck he shot. So these guys went 4 for 4 on public land for their very first time going out there, completely DIY, and they batted 100%, which is pretty damn amazing. So we're talking to them today and talking about their hunt and how they prepared and really getting into the nitty gritty of, what their hunt, looked like and how everything unfolded. Really cool story. Makes me want to jump on a, plane or drive up to Montana right now and go go mule deer hunting myself. Lots of fun. We had some good laughs and good stories as well. So let's not wait any longer. Let's get Joe and Jackson on the line.
Are you the guy that's been calling Jackson from an unknown line?
Yes, that's me. I've been placing miscellaneous orders and tying up your customer service line.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
That's me.
What have you been up to, man? How was your season?
It's actually not been too bad. I got that mule deer second season rifle in Colorado, And then I got a doe and a small little buck in Oklahoma last week. So it's been fun, man. It's been good. Not as good as your guys's. You guys have been knocking down the muleys.
Yeah, doing good on muleys and can't find a whitetail buck to save my life.
Yeah,
what?
Yeah, what? Has it been pretty slow there?
We were gone the hot week. They bucks were dropping like flies, man. Like the last 2 weeks of bow season. And about the time we got home, there's kind of a lull going on right now.
Yeah, for sure. Has it been? It was pretty damn cold in Oklahoma when I was there last week. Has it been cold where you're at? Has it been kind of warm?
It's been cold enough. I shot a doe on Friday. I've still got her hanging. I mean, it's
nice.
It's feeling pretty good. I mean, it's not getting above 40.
Heck yeah!
So I'm gonna set her up tomorrow night. I mean, I'm gonna let them hang as long as I possibly can.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing. I've actually been quartered mine out, right? And then I've got this fridge in my garage that I stack everything in there on racks so it still gets good air, and I just let it age for a week or two, and then I cut it up. Turns out pretty good.
I shot that doe about 250 yards from my house, and Jackson was making fun of me when we got back from Montana. He's like, "You're going to start quartering everything." I was seriously contemplating quartering her up right there behind my house. That's the way to do it. It is.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So like when I was in Oklahoma last week, this one spot where I was seeing all the deer and where I shot that buck and doe, it's a mile back in, and granted it's flat, but it's like real sandy in the river bottoms. So like a game cart would suck, and you're not going to drag anything that far by yourself. So I was using my Mystery Ranch pack and, you know, quartering them up, then I can get the whole thing out in one hit. It was perfect, man. It works out good.
Perfect.
So, how's things going with Big Time? You guys just going gangbusters or what?
Staying busy, man. Just keep on going.
Hell yeah.
Hey, ever since we got that advice from you that it's a dog eat dog world, we'll just keep on going.
You guys bring that up all the time. I laugh about that shit too. I mean, it was that ATA show was just such a mess, man. Well, that was in Louisville a couple years ago.
Yeah. Well, did you see Jeff killed him and his brother killed muleys too?
No shit.
They went the week after us and cleaned house after we got done.
I'm gonna have to get Jeff. I should have had Jeff on the phone too. Maybe I'll have to have him on as a separate podcast. Be pretty cool.
Dude, Big Time part one, Big Time part two. Whitetail guys go mule deer hunting.
Yeah, exactly. So how did all this begin? Did you guys, is this something that one of you guys just came up with and was like, hey, let's do this mule deer hunt, or let's do a Western trip. We don't know what it's going to be. And then you kind of decided on mule deer. Like, lay us down the background to kind of how all this started and, you know, how you decided on, you know, mule deer hunt in Montana.
That was all Jackson. I'll let him take that part. So, my father-in-law and I were talking about going out west all the time. And, we actually had an elk hunt planned in Colorado, and, it kind of fell through the cracks. We had an outfitter booked, and then he ended up having to cancel on us. And then by that time, just a bunch of other things had changed, and the dates didn't work out. So I kind of had a plan B, you know, worst case, we'll just go chase after some mule deer. And yeah, so I landed on mule deer, but so Montana seemed like the best option.
Yeah.
I mean, the draw percentage, you know, it was just a general season tag, and I was trying to find areas that had low pressure and specifically areas that I couldn't find any research on, you know, so just trying to stay off the beaten path.
Yeah. So Montana is that was an OTC tag, or you just get a leftover draw?
Well, the general season tag
it's not OTC, but it's like a 99% draw odd. I mean, there's more applications than there is tags given out, but I mean, very rarely you're not going to draw one. So
yeah.
If you draw that general season tag, you can hunt it with rifle in most of the units. I mean, they have limited draw units, but the particular area that I had kind of set my sights on was just a general season tag.
Got it. What is a non-resident tag cost there for mule deer?
It was just shy of 700.
Yeah, it's 600 and some. I mean,
it's 679 or something like that.
It's an expensive tag, but that kind of went along with my, I mean, we're...
You were going to spend that in Colorado.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, like I said, my whole mindset was try to find somewhere that's low pressure and we'd see a lot of deer and our chances of going 4 for 4 would be good on some decent deer. So, you know, I picked an area that's not known for trophy bucks necessarily, but has a good population of good deer. And, you know, by looking at kind of maps, there was very, very, very limited lodging and a lot of ground that was public. So I knew our chances of not getting crowded out would be good.
Yeah.
I mean, another thing we did, we went kind of a week earlier than what it's known for the rut. So we kind of got there before the crowd.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I know you're a Western guy now and you might be used to seeing a lot of trucks on a trailhead or whatever. You know, where we're from, we're not used to hunting around people because it's basically all private. So, that was my, just trying to get away from the crowd.
I think that was the biggest chain or hurdle we had to overcome is don't get distracted just because you see a car parked there, because chances are we're going to go farther and harder than them anyway.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of those guys going, you know, 200 yards off the road, glassing, nope, nothing here, and walking away. We're willing to go 2 miles in.
Yeah, and that was another thing, too, is that that area is known for people just to drive around and basically hunt from the truck. So,
which, for good reason.
Yeah.
Because as soon as we cross the state line, the big plan was to leave Thursday night, stop, get some sleep, and then drive in the next day. You know, once we get on the road, get some caffeine in us and everything, I've got like 5 full cans of chew, so we don't need to stop at all. And
you got to have that.
We're both like, we're going. We're just keep driving.
Yeah.
We cross the line at first light. We're ready to hunt. And how big do you think that, I mean, he was
170, 180 inch.
I would say easily 170. Crosses the road in front of us while we're driving on public.
No kidding.
Okay, guess that's a pretty good omen.
I had a similar thing happen to me. My first whitetail trip to Kansas. We roll in at night, and we had this like 160 inch deer just kind of walk right in front of, you know, the public ground where we were on. And I was like, oh my God, this is why we came out here. So I can relate for sure. You show up, you see that you're like, it's on.
It was a blessed trip right from the beginning. I mean, and I'm going to give it to Jackson. He put some serious time and research.
Oh, I bet.
You know, he picked the unit and all of that. Then we really, you know, once I got dad, because my dad just retired, he's 62, and I wanted to do something for him for a retirement party. So this was like the perfect, you know, the four of us going out. You know, I think it's going to be easy enough for the two older guys. You know, it's not rugged terrain. So that, you know, he picked all these spots, and then we really sat down and doing the topos and kind of just, for a couple Indiana hillbillies, we did pretty good on picking, just kind of guessing from aerials.
Yeah, you did really, really good. 4 for 4 is nothing to shake your head at. That's pretty amazing, especially for DIY public land, never been out there before. That's quite the feat. That's why when I saw those pictures, I was like, man, I got to get these guys on the show, because this is amazing. This is something that doesn't happen every day.
The very first I shot my buck on the first afternoon by complete chance, and he died within 100 yards of where we had a waypoint to go check. Like, it was 100% luck.
Wow, that's cool. So hey, Jackson, were you kind of contacting any biologists or department officials and kind of getting some intel that way on like age class of deer or hunter numbers or all that stuff? Or did you just kind of do everything via kind of you know, looking at maps and, you know, harvest statistics?
The only phone call I made, I won't jump ahead to that. The misleading thing about Montana on general units, they don't really have an idea of harvest. It's all really estimated because you don't actually have to check in your animal and say what unit you shot it in.
Oh, okay.
So I took those items into consideration, but, you know, just trying to get creative, you can find a lot of stuff on the internet. So, you know, find some outfitters in the area and look at the quality of deer that they're killing. What really helped me was my fishing background and you know, reading the maps and trying to get creative. Cause you know, when I fished tournaments, it was the same deal. You were successful if you got creative and fished things that people overlooked.
Yeah.
So I'd kind of picked just a whole section of the state and looked for those little key areas, you know, where we could, you know, have little slivers of public land that went up in between private that looked like good, you know, pinch points that deer would be traveling. And, yeah, so the only phone call I made was to a BLM office trying to figure out how we'd be able to tell what roads were public or private. Because, I mean, I'll have to hand it to Onyx Maps. I mean, that was really crucial in all my planning. And they had a lot of the two-track roads and stuff shown, but there's not – you can't really tell what is public or private. So I had to do a little investigating there. And once we got out there, there was a few areas we thought we could get into that we couldn't. And vice versa, there was a few that we could get into that we didn't think we could. So, yeah, it was just basically all internet research.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, once you kind of selected this general area, did you have, let's say, like, kind of 10 different options or 5 different kind of little areas that you wanted to kind of hit or zero in on or have backup plans? Kind of like, what was your planning process in that regard?
We had so many waypoints hit that we didn't even touch most of them. Cause actually by the second day, my dad killed on the second day and it was just, we were actually heading to another spot, drove past this one on the way back. Hey, it's early. Let's just go check that one out. Just by chance, we end up, getting eyes on that buck and going from there. I mean, that actually ended up being our best spot.
No kidding. No kidding. So, so with this, like, as far as like your camping situation and like kind of your gear, like what were you camping? Were you, staying in hotels? Did you rent a cabin, pull out a camper? What did that situation look like?
You're asking for trade secrets now.
I want to know all your stuff.
We were roughing it hard, dude. We didn't take a sleeping bag. We didn't take any food with us. It was rough. I mean, he made us rough it.
So once again, you know, looking at lodging situations, you got to get creative. I happened to find an Airbnb, and so we had a 3-bedroom house, dude.
Shit.
The particular town that we were in had 2 motels and I think a total of 10 rooms, but nobody thought to check Airbnb, so we had a house to ourselves for a week.
Wow, that's really cool. See, that's smart. I've done some out-of-state hunting trips, particularly the one last year in Iowa. We stayed in a motel, and it just wasn't the same. Like, I didn't like that. But, like, if you have a cabin or a house where you all can be together and, you know, make dinner, all that stuff, that's, like, the camaraderie. That's, like, hunting camp feel, right? Even if it's just a house.
It's so much nicer when you can make a meal.
Yeah.
And just be able to sit down there and plan and not be around other guys trying to listen in to you.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to camp it, and I think next year when I go back out, I don't even know what I want to do yet, but it's probably going to be a backcountry tent hunt. But this was a good one just to cut our teeth with, but still had a house to go back. You know, I learned a lot just what's necessary to bring with you and what's not.
Oh, yeah.
It was interesting, you know, the size of the pack you would take at the first part of the week compared to how we were packing by the end of the week. Because those things were full at the first of the week. By the last day, when we're trying to get Jackson's tag filled, I mean, I've got like 2 bottles of water and some Skittles, and that's about it.
Oh yeah,
I'm coming back with
Yeah, that's how it goes. You're always like, oh, I need this space blanket and this big emergency kit, and I need my side piece, and I need all this water and all this food. And it's just like, you can always just walk back to the damn truck, you know? It might be a mile or two, but...
throw out the toilet paper, I've got sagebrush. It's all good. Yeah.
Ooh, that'd get a little rough. I think I have to take TP with me. I don't know if I could do that.
I'm still waddling, dude. I'm still waddling.
So with
the lights did not get cold from my pack, so I was good.
So with that, did you guys buy... gearing up for this, I mean, did you guys go out and buy frame packs and, you know, good boots and any, you know, major kind of gear purchases that were kind of, you know, more Western focused for this particular hunt?
I'll start on that one. Let's see. So me, I already have boots, but, you know, being Indiana whitetail guys, everything we have is super warm, made to sit in the tree stand all day, you know? So,
yep.
I did have to purchase a lot of new gear. I went with Sitka just from recommendation, you know, everybody recommended to try it out. So, that was a big help because, you know, in the morning, a few mornings, you know, it's 5 or 6 degrees out and 15, 20 mile an hour winds. And, it was really nice to have something lightweight that was warm because when you're active, it's just a totally different preparation as far as clothes go. So
yeah.
I had just kind of, you know, got a layering system where I had a base layer, mid layer, an outer layer, and I could just take them off and add as I needed. But other than that, I mean, I bought a tripod because I never needed that in Indiana.
I went with, I've become a really big fan of the Midway USA apparel.
Okay.
And, you know, just some heavyweight base layers and that Midway stuff, man, I was loving it. I mean, there was a couple days where it was, when we got out there, it was 6 degrees, but we're moving. So it never did get bad on us.
No.
And I was the same way. I had my own boots that I had a pair of Danners that I've had for years and they're broken and feel great until they get wet. Then I had to put them in the oven, but
the other benefit of having an Airbnb, you can dry your boots in the oven.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so nice. Yeah. Yeah. Who needs a boot dryer, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, set it on 250, leave the oven cracked, and you're good to go.
With foil on the bottom.
Yeah, you got to put foil on it because the mud will get in there.
Pro tip. You don't want to.
The biggest mistake that I made was I went way too big on my gun. And
no, not you, Joe.
Yeah. Yeah. I bought a Savage Model 10 Precision Ashbury, and it is 100% a bench gun. Jackson advised against it, but I did it anyway. Thankfully, I didn't have to lug that thing around all week. But
yeah, he only had to tote that thing around for maybe 150 yards. Yeah, because he literally shot his deer 10 minutes into the first hunt, and then after that, he just played guide.
And I shot it at 60 yards. Like, I was ready to make this 400-yard miraculous shot on a monster muley, and I shoot the first buck that I see because he had chocolate antlers, and he didn't go 60 yards past that, but yeah, so, that was a mistake. That was way too heavy.
So that's how
I'm
you
so
got
confident.
Yeah, so that's how you got the first straws, because everyone felt bad for you carrying around that heavy-ass gun.
Well, you know, we paired up. I mean, Jackson's with Brad, his father-in-law. I'm with my dad.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody's used to that I'm shooting first argument. Between me and my dad, it was, no, I want you to shoot first. No, I want you to shoot first. So this deer jumped up, and he couldn't get it on that. Pretty sure he was just giving it to me. He was like, okay, get on it. So I just raised up and shot it. It was all good.
That's
cool. The binos were my best purchase because I got Nikon adjustable magnification. So
okay.
I could really zero in. So I think it was, what, 6 to 15?
Mm-hmm.
That was nice because I could really zoom in on once I had something to focus on.
Yeah, and how about, like... Jackson, your father-in-law and Joe, your dad, were they buying a bunch of gear too, or had they been on a few Western trips before, or were they kind of in the same boat, they're buying certain items?
My father-in-law, he'd done one other Western hunt, so he was the one that recommended the Sitka stuff to me, so he was pretty well prepared for it.
Yeah.
My dad's never been out of Indiana. He's 100% a meat hunter. If it's brown, it's down. So he was just like, tell me what to take.
Yeah, he didn't have much technical.
Yeah. No, he did not get technical at all. He said, just tell me what to do.
Hey.
But I think for him, the best decision, buddy of mine is a cross-country runner, and he let him borrow some of his hiking poles. And that really saved that.
Yeah, that was a good.
Yeah.
I mean, that really, because, I mean, he had been walking. You know, he put the, I did buy a Tenzing 4000 pack, and that worked out. For what we were doing, that size was perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he was taking that pack and putting, like, 25 pounds in it, walking 3, 4, 5 miles a day.
Yeah.
Which helped, but until you get out there, I mean, you're, walking in Indiana is nothing like what you're doing there.
Yeah.
But it did help prepare. He held his own, though. He did really good.
Well, that's the main thing. I mean, as long as you can kind of, you know, you don't have to be a super athlete, right? I mean, we all know anybody can go out there and do it. But, you know, anytime you can put some boots on and do some pack hikes and kind of get used to your gear and at the same time get a little bit of cardio, it's gonna save you because you got that long drive, you're tired, you're amped up, and you get out there and you're at, you know, 8,000 feet or whatever you're at, and it'll kick your ass if you're not ready.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And we kind of learned that, you know, Joe kind of hit on a minute ago, just going farther than the next guy. And we kind of learned our strategy was we like an area back here. You go until you get to the points where your legs don't work anymore. And you're like, there's no way I'm going to pack a deer out this far. And you go another mile and then you're into the deer.
That's another good tip. I like that. That's...
But it was just find the low pressure areas, you know, that you could just really tell. The deer that we ended up shooting, they were comfortable moving in the daytime. They just hadn't been hunted yet.
Yeah. Yeah. So like knowing that your dads are with you, like what type of terrain is it? I mean, are you these high country dark timber bucks, or is this a lot of like kind of sage canyons that you're getting into? Tell us a little bit about the terrain.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah.
There was a lot of barren, just coolies.
Yeah.
I think I'm saying that right. Call it a holler in Indiana.
I think they call them coolies out there. Canyons, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, a little coolies.
We, you know.
The timber was tough.
The timber was hard to hunt. We did find that out. But it was also the higher pressure. It had more deer in it, but they were harder to spot and put together a good game plan because you would spot a deer and then go to stalk on it, and you'd run into, like, three groups of deer on the way that you had no idea were there.
Yeah.
Where we capitalized was in the open country. We'd see them from a really long way away and, you know, just be patient. And, I mean, I was up on a mountaintop glassing when my father-in-law shot his with Joe, and I watched the whole thing from up there, you know, a mile away. And, I mean, would that stalk take two and a half hours for you guys even get there?
We glassed that deer at 0.68 miles away. And
holy cow.
I really enjoyed that open stalk where you had those ravines and everything. That was my favorite part of the trip, not pulling the trigger, but I was lucky enough to watch the other three deer go down. I was with Jackson, Dad, and Brad on all their deer. And that was by far my favorite part of it, was seeing the deer and then putting that game plan together on how to get to it.
Yeah.
And the open area, just getting down to the bottom and working around, knowing where he was, hoping he's still there. It worked out way too well, way too many times. I'm spoiled, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. So like what's a typical day look like for you guys? Obviously, you'd had these points kind of picked out. You mentioned, you know, hey, there's a little strip of BLM here that might be, you know, pretty good backing up to this private. But, like, you know, you get out of your nice warm bed in your house, right? Make some breakfast. You drive to, you know, this area, right? Do you start driving roads and glassing? Or are you parking before light and kind of getting off the road a couple miles and then trying to glass from a vantage point? Like, what did a typical day look like for you?
The first couple days was we would leave at first light so we could kind of see what we were doing because we weren't familiar with the area at all.
Yeah, makes sense.
And, you know, we'd hunt an area in the morning, and then maybe midday when things were getting slower, we'd drive and look at other public ground areas. And in between those, you can get some hella viewing of big bucks on private. I mean, you could drive around private ground and see just muley bucks everywhere. So, but yeah, once we got an idea of some of the areas and what we liked and where we were seeing deer, then our strategy changed to we're getting out there, we're going to get up on this mountaintop before it even gets light.
Yeah, yeah. I think we were, the first part of that week, it was, okay, we want to be getting out of the truck at 8. By the end of the week, it was, okay, we're getting out of the truck at 5.
Yeah.
You know, we'd park at dark and hike back for a mile or two or even three before it even got light. But, you know, we had to know where we were going prior to that. I mean, we weren't really just going in blind.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a huge mistake that I think a lot of people make. They just get excited on these adventure hunts and out of state trips. They show up and they just want to, you know, whether it's a whitetail hunt or whatever, they just want to get out there and go into that area and just like start hunting, right? But I've found, you know, from a lot of my trips, and it sounds like you guys did the same thing. You know, you get in there after light. You do much glassing, you're driving around, you're checking out as many pieces as possible. And, you know, I've felt it's benefited me, and it sounds for sure like it helped with you guys too, because you got to get the lay of the land. You don't know what you're doing. Once you've figured that out, then you can kind of start, you know, getting to those spots and figuring out from there.
Yeah, that was the first piece. And then the second piece was we had to adapt because we never hunted mule deer, and, you know, we're whitetail guys, so rather than trying to hunt them like whitetails, I think a big piece of our success was we went in knowing we're not hunting whitetails and we need to figure out what these mule deer do.
Yeah.
And it's not just they bed at night and they go out and feed in the morning and then go bed and then come out again in the evening and feed. It was totally different cycles and behaviors for sure. That was one thing that I really noticed.
Yeah.
And it was for me going in, it was with a whitetail, I will sit there and wait on him all day. With muleys, I mean, that was really fast. Blast it hard. Once I see it, I'm going to get him.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not going to sit around and wait. Maybe he'll come to us.
Yeah.
We're going to go get him.
Yeah, maybe you want to move or something.
And each day, you know, your iPhone, like, tracks how far you walk or whatever, and each day progressively got longer and longer to walk, farther and farther.
Yeah, what were you guys covering? Yeah. I mean, were you doing 10 miles? Were you doing 5? What did that look like?
Well, like, so Joe shot his the first day, then his dad shot his the next day. And then a day or two later, Brad shot his. So then I had some opportunities at deer throughout that whole time. I was being a little picky.
We spent 2 days where once we got the OGs done, which was kind of the game plan from the beginning.
Yeah.
We wanted to get the OGs done,
yep.
Old guys, and then me and Jack could really go.
Yeah, so the first 3 days when we were hunting with them guys, you know, it was like 4 or 5 mile days.
Yep.
Then once me and Joe could come loose, we were doing, you know, 9, 10 miles.
And keep in mind, my dad's 62 years old, and Brad had a pacemaker put in 5 weeks before this hunt.
Holy
yeah.
Shit.
Yeah. So when we went to get his deer, I was pushing him to his max. Like, I kept on looking back. Are you okay? Are you good? I can't pack you out of here. are you okay? I was really relieved when I saw Jackson a mile away glassing us. Like, okay, at least he can see me and he knows where we are.
Yeah, yeah. Kudos to him. Because like you said, Joe pushed him and we packed that deer out 4 miles for him, didn't we?
Yeah, wow. Yeah, I was a rock star.
Yeah,
wow.
But we got up there on the deer. That was actually the farthest shot. He shot that deer at 277 yards.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's get into some of the details. As you know, obviously you guys went 4 for 4. Each of you guys shot a buck, which is amazing. Tell us about some of the details. Like, so Joe, you were kind of up to bat first, or it was between you and your dad. But you ended up taking the first shot. Talk to us about, you know, kind of that. I know it happened quick, but I just want to walk through each one of your guys' deer and just kind of how everything unfolded, if that sounds good.
On that first one, you know, we pulled up and we're glassing. We had seen three does right out in the open meadow.
Yeah, there was a couple high meadows that we saw some does probably, I don't know, 700-800 yards off where we parked the
truck. Yeah, not real far. You saw the two in the high. I looked over and there was this little ridge and I could see just the head of a doe. But the ridge was kind of blocking anything else that could be with her. Jackson's like, well, I'm going to go up here to the left. I said, well, we'll go to the right. I'm going to see what's on the other side of this ridge. And we go our separate ways. Brad was actually sick.
Yeah, first day Brad stayed in the truck.
So he was in the truck. Me and Dad get up there. I can still see the doe. I've got two more does out in the meadow. I was like, all right, Dad, I'm going to like just kind of creep up here and see what else is over the top of this. Stick my head up, and there's another doe 10 yards from me staring right at me. I'm like, that's not good. I mean, we just stared at each other for like 2 minutes.
That's the nice thing about mule deer, that you can get away. You can get away with a little bit more. Oh, they're not as spooky as whitetails.
Well, she finally goes back down to where I can't see her through the draw and pops up on the other side with seven more does. And they all go screaming out. The buck comes out of the bottom. And what is it with them turning broadside once they get to the top of the ravine? Like every single buck that we saw, they would, like, if you jumped him, he'd get up out of his bed, go up to the top, turn totally broadside to you, and stare at you. And that's when I shot this one. I mean, it was just like, all right, if you're going to give it to me, I'll take it. I mean, it was literally just that fast.
Yeah. Wow. And, so that's got to be a cool feeling to have one down that quick in the trip, you know, right out of the gate.
Yeah, that was a bonus day. We weren't even supposed to be there yet. That was on Friday.
But, I mean, that was like, he was close enough that we had the game cart and we just towed him out on that.
Wow.
Looking back, I probably would have supported him up.
Yeah, now knowing it was much easier.
Yeah. Well, you didn't waste any time.
Yeah, that was just quick, fast, and easy.
Rod got required it. A little more work.
Yeah, Dad's was the next morning, and I really learned quick that I wanted to hunt a crosswind. I didn't want to be upwind, obviously, or obviously didn't want to be upwind of them. But when we saw Dad's deer, and it was a pretty good ways away. It was probably just under a half mile, but he was down in the draw by himself, and we had perfect terrain to sneak up on him, and Dad's shooting a 270, and he had told us right off the bat he was not going to shoot any further than 200 yards. Like, that's fine. You know, that's what you want to shoot.
Yeah.
That's what we'll make happen. And work down there to him, and we're in the bottom basically with him, and I can just see the tops of his antlers, so I range up there. He's a 264. And he's like, I was like, we can't see him anyway. All I can see is his antlers. So I was like, we've got time.
And he's bedded
down, yeah.
Is this like middle of the day, late morning? What is this?
Late morning.
Late morning, okay.
And this was the second day there, and it was very windy. I think we had 25 mile an hour wind. So I'll throw that in there for him.
Oh, got it. Well, so, it gives you some room to kind of, you know, be mobile and get a little closer.
Absolutely. So I sat Dad down. I was like, all right, you sit down, get your breathing under control. Just calm down. We got nothing but time. He's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, he's out of the wind. So I get a little bit higher elevation so I can kind of see around. And I'm looking to where it would be good. And we're going to make a move on him. Can't get out there because he's going to see us. So, Dad, we just got to go up this ridge and see where we're at. And we start climbing. Just, I mean, it wasn't a huge climb, but it was probably what? 50, 60 feet up there.
Maybe.
Not bad at all.
Yeah.
But left the packs down below. And I get up there. I mean, this was just sheer luck. When I looked over the edge, I range. He's a 202. And there was a little rock bluff that jutted out. I could see half of his rack, his body, and his head was blocked by this rock 100 yards in between us. And Dad was on my right at this point. He can't see him at all. So, I mean, this is a game of inches. My dad needed to get back down below me, come up on my left side real slow. He comes up, takes his bifocals off because he can't see through the scope with his bifocals on. And he's like, okay, I can see him. I can see him. I don't have a rest. I was like, Dad, I can't climb back down and get the bag for you. I need you to find a way to rest this gun. It was kind of like when I was 12 and he was telling me how to do it, which is really cool.
Roll is reversed okay, right here.
Yeah. So I'm holding his glasses. And I've got the binos on the deer. He goes, you want me to shoot him in his bed? I want you to shoot him in his bed. He's at 202. I'm not getting any closer. You can give me the 2 yards. It's not going to change. And he gets rested, and it was literally, he goes, okay, I've got him. I hear the safety, and boom. Like within a second, I see him, click, boom.
He didn't waste any time either.
He didn't play. And I told him before, I was like, I want you to focus on that shot, but as soon as you make that shot, you need to be racking another one in.
Yep.
And, I mean, the deer literally just fell over. I mean, he never stood up. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
His head just went down. I'm on him the whole time. He's like, where's he at? He's in the same spot, Dad. He jumped.
He never moved.
He never flinched. And we've had a lot of special times together hunting. But seeing my dad smile like that, I'm crying like a little bitch. He's just sitting there laughing. Let's go get this son of a bitch. He leaves me behind. I mean, he's running down here. And it ended up, I mean, it was a really heavy 4x5.
Like, yeah.
I mean, not real at all times, but he was heavy, old deer. A real pearly white rack. And that was pretty special.
Yeah.
That was really cool. He punched him.
Oh, yeah. Sounds
so now
like it.
He's hell bent on whitetail hunting with a 270 now. I said, you know that doesn't happen every time, right?
Well, that's
now,
sweet.
I really like that crosswind hunting because, you know, you can tell he's trying to smell what's upwind, but he's focused looking downwind, and he has no clue on the sides.
Yep, I'm with you there. All my stalking, all my setups, I come in, I take the side door. I'm exactly with you there, Joe. It's just, yeah, they're looking down, they're looking downwind, they're smelling upwind, and if you can come in from the side, you can get away with a little bit more. So that's the way I play it. Sounds like you guys figured that out too.
100% that rock bluff was my saving grace, though. We wouldn't have got that deer without it.
Yeah, and once we figured out, you know, what they do in the wind, it made us a lot more precise on picking where we needed a glass and what we needed a glass. So, you know, once we had a windy day to figure out what it did to them, we got a little more efficient on our plans.
Yeah. Were you guys dealing with any thermals at all, or was it just kind of more just wind direction, like whitetail?
We were spotting from so far away and putting plans together that thermal didn't really come into effect. We weren't really on top of them.
Yeah.
It was pretty wide open country
for
all the kills.
Now, Brad's deer, that one kind of plays into Dad's deer at the end of that because Jackson and I and Dad are down there quartering his deer up. Brad's up on the ridge actually where we had spotted Dad's in the first place. He's seeing deer all over the place.
While they're down there cutting it up.
Yes. But that's when we made the game plan. I was like, well, we're going to come back here for Brad's deer because he was seeing a lot of deer that he liked.
Yeah.
And we didn't go back the next day.
We gave it a day
rest. We gave it a day to rest and went back and sat in that very spot. And I think Brad was pretty hell-bent on just sitting there all day.
Yeah.
The whitetail man was coming at it. And I'm like, I'm sitting there twitching, drinking coffee. And I'm like, I don't know about this. And, I mean, like I said, it was like 0.68 miles and we see this deer silhouetted on the ridge and we're looking at him and Brad kept on looking up there and he's like, man, what do you think? I said, I guarantee you we can get up there. We've got the cover to get to him. We've got the terrain to get around. And then we saw a nicer buck with him kind of working to the left and he's like, all right, let's go. Text Jackson. He's actually looking at the same deer way off. He sees us moving. I'm texting him. We're moving in. We're going to try it. And got up there on a really nice ridge. Peeked over. and there was actually a, what was it, 4x4? Right? Yeah, it was 4x4 with brows.
4x4 with brows.
Yeah, nice. We think the correct terminology on that is a 4x4 with brows. So it's either a 5x5. You can clarify that.
Yeah.
It was a 10
pointer. It all equals out.
It was a solid 10 pointer. Yeah. But it actually ended up not even being the buck that we were going after. It was better. And he was bedded with two other smaller bucks and ranged him at 344. And Brad really wanted to get 300. And I said, okay, cool. And we're belly crawling up the ridge some more. Where I think we're about 300, it ends up being 277.
Oh, sweet.
And he took a lot of time getting ready. And I was talking to him, like, just calm down. He's not going anywhere. And I think it was probably 20 minutes. Because he kept, is my gun barrel clear in the grass? Good, man. Whenever you're comfortable. He's like, all right, you ready? I said, I've been ready, brother. My fingers are frozen. I'm good. Pulls the trigger, and he's got a misfire.
Oh, no.
And this is factory ammo.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately in my mind, I know Jackson's behind us watching. I'm ready to text him. If it goes like that again, I'm going to text him trying to get up here because we're going to need a gun. But another 20 minutes go by. He's getting set again. That got him rattled. I mean, he was nervous.
Oh, that sucks. That's about the worst thing that can happen.
Oh, he was like, okay, I think I'm ready. I'm like, I wait for the – I mean, we had some pretty nasty wind gusts. At 277, I knew the bullet wouldn't really be effective, but I was more nervous about him kind of flinching with the wind.
Yeah.
Ends up making the shot. The deer jumps up. And I've always, personally, after seeing all these Western hunts and everything, I've always wanted to play that outfitter part where he says, hit him again.
Yep.
And I got to say that. He shoots again. The deer falls back down his bed. Brad put two shots with a 30-06 within 2 inches of each other. I mean, this deer had no chance. Just smoking twice. Too perfect. The second shot was not necessary, but he was standing. So I was like, you got to kill him. Just shoot him.
Yeah. Wow. So, like, this area where he shot this buck, or, you know, Brad and then your dad, Joe, what kind of made you think, or why were these deer there? Did it have a little bit of everything, like cover? Was it secluded? Why were all these deer in that area?
I think I'll wrap that up with mine.
All right. Yeah. Let's do it.
So, we'll just go in chronological order here. So, this was Monday when Brad shot his, or Sunday?
Monday. It was Monday because Monday Sunday was the day of rest. We keep holy the Sabbath.
Yeah. So I while they're chasing that one, I had stocked up on some bedded bucks, but, you know, I was being a little picky and you know, they weren't quite shooters. So
I wasn't being a little picky.
I was being pretty picky. So knowing that Brad was about to shoot that one, I was like, man, I've got like 4 days left, and we've went 3 deer in 4 days, and basically one was just a rest day anyway. So, you know, the next day, Joe and I, we covered like 9 miles of a new area that I really liked, but it was extremely rugged. So I'd kind of saved that for when I could get after it either by myself or with him. So
yep.
We went way back in this really rugged area, and I bet we saw maybe 6 or 7 shooters back there, a couple just absolute studs. But we were so far back, we were on the edge of the private ground, and those deer, man, they know the lines. And
oh, for sure.
They walk the line.
Yeah.
They're Johnny Cash.
Yeah. So we had gotten into this area, set up, glassed a couple bucks from up there. They weren't very big. And then we got a glimpse of a real big one that skylined himself over the mountain over our shoulder. So it was, maybe 3/4 of a mile away. So we hauled ass up there and crested that hill and not really knowing what's on the other side. So, you know, we had to kind of crawl up, and we go over that hill, and it's just a big timbered canyon, and he just disappeared into it. So we're kind of like, well, crap, what do we do now? So we sat up there for a minute, and in one of the meadows, like another mile away, was 2 studs. And I'm looking at the Onyx maps, and I'm like, man, they're like right on the line. Like, I don't know. We can just kind of work our way there and get a closer look and get a gauge of where they're at.
Yeah.
So we start slipping through the timber, and all of a sudden, 4x4 and three does pop up. And I probably would have shot him, but I didn't have a real clean shot. And once again, I was being picky. So they never really ran. They kind of worked their way away. And then we get out to this first meadow and saw a real nice, was he a 4x4, Joe?
Yeah.
It was a real nice one, like definite shooter. But he never gave me a shot, and they walked. They were right on the line. They ended up walking into private, so we couldn't go after them. And by that time, the ones that we were originally putting the stock on, they disappeared. So, you know, that whole area, it was just really hard to kill a deer in, but there was obviously deer everywhere in there.
Yeah.
And so we kind of had that in the back of our mind. We ended up going – so the next day we went back to an area kind of by where Joe had shot his, and by that time there was like nine guys getting out of a truck
where
we had parked a few jets.
You could definitely tell the bucks were starting to chase, but I'm pretty sure somebody – that was from Wisconsin called Every Hunter in Wisconsin because all the plates were cheesehead.
Yeah. So we get back there and we're like, well, hell with this. There's too many dudes here. So
they're probably doing a good deer drive.
I don't know. So I told Joe, I'm like, by this time we'd kind of gotten a pattern. Like if you had an area that had, you know, these three ingredients, then chances are you're going to see some deer. So I was like, hey, do you see that kind of meadow? And it had some canyons and some cover. I said, let's just go sit on that because we only had like an hour light left. So we sneak up there. We get a good glassing spot. We sit down. About 4 minutes later, these three does walk out. And I'm watching the does, and all of a sudden, just absolute giant walks out behind those does. And, I mean, just
he was
like
– he was epic.
I mean, it's hard for me to judge muleys. But, you know, we're talking over 180 inches pretty easily.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I'm like freaking out. I'm like, all right, I'm glad I've been picky because this dude is like, you know, is going on. So we check the property lines, and we got a ton of public ground between us. We put together a game plan, and, you know, looking at it, they've kind of come out of this canyon. They're feeding in this meadow, and they should have fed right to us. So we kind of assumed that, made a big loop around to make sure the wind was right and set up on this meadow so they'd feed their way to us. And we kind of sat there, and they never showed up. So I'm like, well, we're just going to have to kind of press around this hill and see where they're at. And long story short, they didn't feed out in that meadow because they were walking the private and public line, and they ended up going up a mountain to prevent going onto the public ground. So they knew exactly what they were doing.
Oh, wow.
And, so we, you know, knowing that deer was in the area, if we had some room to work with, I would have just stuck it out in that area, but they ended up going up into private ground, and we couldn't chase them. So it got down to the last day, the last morning, and we had these areas with bucks, but Roger and Brad had shot both of their bucks within like 200 yards. And these guys are like, you guys need to go back in there. And I'm like, man, I don't know. I feel like we've done milk that for all it's worth. And
it took some serious persuading because, I mean, I was on the same boat.
Yeah.
I was with Dad, Brad. I was like, man, let's go back and hit it again.
So the options were the super steep terrain timbered area where we knew there was a lot of bucks, but it was going to be really hard to connect with one just because they had the major home court advantage there. Or where Roger and Brad had shot theirs, and it was a totally different scene. And back to what I said earlier, we were trying to find unpressured areas. The average guy would have driven by this access area and not even stopped because it just looked desolate. You drive by there, and it's like, man, if there's deer out there, I'd see it. But so I ended up just deciding to go where they had shot theirs and just hoping we'd run into one more.
I was jumping for joy.
It was a big debate, I'm telling you, dude. We sat there for like 2 hours, and I'm like, I'm all rattled because I was comfortable all week, and now I'm down to the last morning. And I'm like, man, we got to do this 4 for 4 deal. And I was kind of kicking myself because I passed up some pretty good deer. And
it got down to the fourth quarter really quick.
Yeah, it did. It got down to the wire quick. So I'm like, all right, I made my decision. We're going to go back to – I don't even remember what we had that area nickname at the point in time, but – we decided to go back. We're like, all right, we're going to get there like 5 in the morning. We already know where we want to go glass. And so we hiked back in the dark. And being in the dark, we're on the wrong ridge. Once it starts getting light, so we're like, crap,
We were close. We were just one red top.
And he's giving me credit. It was 100% me that took the wrong turn.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, are we going the right way? And he's like, yeah, I've done this every time. You know, so we end up on the wrong ridge. So we have to slip over on the other ridge where we actually wanted glass. And we kind of had the expectation, you know, we got two carcasses basically within a couple hundred yards of each other down in this valley. And we kind of figured we would have to pass those up and hunt beyond those because we figured that area would be kind of tainted.
And that was kind of my mentality of going in that morning was
we were
go
gonna,
hard, get past the carcasses. You were trying to slow me down the whole time. Hey, man, we still need to keep on glassing. I'm like, no, let's go.
Yeah, so me and Joe were kind of having an argument. You know, Brad, you know, these carcasses are almost 4 miles back. So we were going to go beyond those. And we're like, hey, it's the last day. Who cares if we burn out our legs, whatever. So
now keep in mind, though, before we even got out of the truck that morning, we'd already decided no matter what, Brad was going to pick us up at noon.
Yeah, Brad was going to pick us up at noon.
Like, we're getting on the road that day.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, this is
absolute,
not even fourth quarter. This is OT.
So I'm telling Joe, hey, we need to slow down. Like, let's sit here and glass on this ridge for a little bit. And he's like, oh, let's go ahead and cross this canyon. So we take about two more steps, and sure enough, like, four does come hauling out of this canyon right below us. And
we've been glassing right there too.
We had, but
it was a quick.
I mean, like I said, it is open country, and you'd think you'd see any deer in there. But
and we got snow on too,
and it was snowy. Yeah, we had a few inches of snow that night. Mm, so
yeah,
sure enough, these does kind of jump up, and they weren't super spooked, but they knew something was going on. I think they heard us. They just kind of hopped out of the canyon and stopped and. I'm like, you know, it's just three does. And then Joe's like, oh, dude, it's bucks. And I'm like, no, they're does. I'm looking at them right now. He's no, right below them, you know. So
he's watching these does run off at 400 yards. And I'm staring at this really wide buck at 300 going, dude, shoot the buck.
I'm like, they're does. And finally I see the buck. And they're, you know, they're not really running. They're just kind of trotting and stopping. But, you know, I had my pack on and my gun. So I flung my pack off and got my gun up, had to get my scope covers off, get the safety off. I adjusted my zoom on my scope. And by that time, that buck was just kind of trotting. And Joe goes, you want me to stop him? I'm like, hang on. And I got my gun up and I said, okay. So Joe made some strange noise.
Gave him the old whitetail mad.
But that didn't work.
The man didn't work.
So he gives it a grunt or like a bleat first, and I'm watching this deer through my scope, and his left ear turns back. He'd heard it, but he didn't really register it. So then Joe does this weird coyote sound.
I'm not going to do it.
He's not going to do it.
Does it sound like a Bigfoot?
I don't know what it was. Something it like very that. Well could have been a Bigfoot call. And so then that deer's like, what? And he turns around, stop broadside, and I smoked him. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was so. Basically, where that deer dropped was about 100 yards from Roger's gut pile and about 200 yards from Brad's gut pile. So that area is now named Death Valley.
Holy shit!
That's what it's saved. That's what it's saved as on my on my map.
And no, you cannot have the coordinates.
I'll be expecting Onyx Hunt text to come through from you guys. I need to know where that's at.
Yeah. So you know, I think just in my opinion, that area. It was a canyon that was far enough back that nobody would go hunt. They basically climbed that first mountain and glass and not see anything. And we would just get over the second major ridge. And it was just a major travel corridor between private. It was laid out just right. And it was laid out just right for the wind that we had too. So it was just constantly reloading. We'd get in there, shoot a deer, let it rest for a day, come back and there was a new deer, shoot one, give it a day rest, come back. And they were there again. So, it was just, it had all the right ingredients.
Yeah, Death Valley.
To me, the areas that we hunted and walked that were really close to the river, it seemed like more and more deer were getting down into that river valley each day as the rut was really kicking in.
Yeah, they were migrating.
They were leaving the high area to get down into those bottoms. And this was far enough away from it that it really hadn't started drawing those deer from that area, or they weren't going to that area.
Yeah,
sense. We found some great sign. I think it was the second day we were walking when we saw the elk.
When we saw them big elk, yeah.
And I mean, you could tell these deer had been in this area within the last couple of days. I mean, beds everywhere, fresh sign everywhere.
and they were just gone. And they were all in the river bottoms.
Yeah, we were near a river, and in a lot of the areas we're hunting were just basically the immediate high ground from that river. And just, I think, basically early in the week, they were still up in the high ground. And just in that, you know, 5 days we were there, they had all migrated down. So this other area where we ended up killing all these deer, I don't think they really migrated from. It was more of a wintering ground.
A lot changed in 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, this was we early November, right? First week?
Yeah.
Yep.
And, like I said, last day we had 2-3 inches of snow, and, you know, it was 5-6 degrees the last couple mornings.
And you could tell at the meat processor, the deer were getting progressively bigger because we kept going back to the meat pack.
Yeah, he's like, another one.
He knew it by name by the end of the week.
Man, for public land, I mean, he was a cool guy.
But you, for public land guys, you guys are doing good. You can tell that we shot each deer further and further back because Joe comes in the whole carcass. We carted him out. And then his dad came in with bone-in quarters. And then the last two were boned-out quarters.
Shave and weight. Yeah, when you go farther back like that, every pound pound matters. Yeah, for sure.
Dez was bone in with most of the neck by Jackson's. I mean, all the necks off of it were right up to the skull plate. I mean, we were getting good. By no means are we up there with you yet, but we're getting there. We're trying.
Man. Hey, I'm still learning this too. I'm by no means know what I'm doing, but it sounds like you guys got it figured out, man. That's amazing. I mean, like I said, when I saw the pictures and, you know, I was basically just watching day by day on your Instagram, you know, all these pictures come through and I'm like, damn, Joe got one. Okay. His dad got one. I was like, oh, another one down. And then Jackson showed up with that fourth one. I was like, Jesus, man, these guys just killed it.
Indiana boys are on something. you were right, man, though. You hit the nail on the head. It was definitely cool. You can get away with a lot more with a mule deer. That's for sure. And I think that helped us coming from whitetail country.
Oh yeah. If you can stalk or, you know, get within bow range of a whitetail, you can certainly you know, get within rifle range of a muley for sure.
Yeah.
But you know, to your you know, point too, Jackson, I mean, sounds like you did a lot of preparation and a lot of scouting and a lot of planning, and that too, I think, is where successful hunts are made. You know, you can't just go out and wing an out-of-state trip and be like, oh, I think this spot looks good. Sounds like you really did your homework, and I think that played out pretty big for you guys.
It eliminated a lot of time in the truck. I had like 30-some areas picked out of huntable areas, and then once I did that, Joe and I sat down and kind of picked our top 3 or 4 that we really liked what it had to offer. And, you know, just having that narrowed down saved it a ton. We didn't even have to really scout. I mean, the hunting was scouting, but we kind of had our minds made up, and I could see how you could get overwhelmed if we didn't have that game plan already, because I mean, it's awesome out there. There's so much opportunity and so much land, but if you don't have a game plan and you get out there, man, you can just get overwhelmed and just want to try to cover everything and end up spending your entire day in the truck.
I think the other important part, we always had A, B, and C plan too. Mm-hmm. You know, we always knew where we wanted to go, but okay, well, if there's 5 trucks there, then that's probably pretty crowded. But there was never really that, well, if this happens, then we're going to do this. I mean, there was never a panic mode or anything.
Yeah.
I think that really, and I, you know, having your, one of your hunting buddies is your boss helps too, because he'd come into my office and be like, what are you doing? I'm like, working. Come on, we got to look at this map real quick. Okay. I'm good with it.
Hey, that's working too, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So are you guys already planning for next year, or what does that look like?
You know, well, I never did finish my story on, you know, I told you how we ended up mule deer hunting, but I had to basically twist Joe's arm to get him to come on this trip. Like, I'm like, dude, I've been putting in for points out west. Like, you need to come out here. It just worked out. He wanted to do something for his dad, so he came along. And we were not even on the road for 5 minutes, and we were already talking about what we want to do next year. So,
yeah. I mean, After seeing all those speed goats out there, I definitely need an antelope.
Yeah, we're going to have to find some pronghorn next year, I think, is going to be the four guys' fun trip like this. And then, and me personally, I'm gonna do an elk hunt.
I'm not quite there on elk yet. I mean, I'm not saying I'll never do it, but I'm just not amped up yet.
I am.
I know you are.
Well, you'll get your arm twisted, Joe, and then you'll catch that bug too. So just be aware.
What solidified that was when we were sitting there glassing one morning, there was five giant bulls feeding in a meadow out in front of us, and I was like, "Oh yeah, I've got that."
Yeah. That's when, like, we're sitting there, we're watching the sun come up, watching these four big bulls. But man, we're back here good now. If we got this many elk walking around with us, we're back here in no man's land.
Yeah, you know you're in pretty uncharted public ground when there's, I mean, those were all like mid 300-inch bulls.
Oh, wow. Giants.
And they're on public ground. I mean, like, if we had an elk tag, they were on public ground, they would have been fair game. So
from my extensive experience with elk, yes, I would say they're 300s.
They were big, mature bulls. I mean, I've looked at enough pictures, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's cool,
but
guys.
The other surprising thing is the size of the porcupine.
Yeah.
Oh, porcupines.
They're huge. I always picture them as this, like, little rodent, like the size of a coon.
They are big. Well, I think it depends on where you're at, too, because I've seen some pretty small ones, you know, in, like, Michigan. But, yeah, out here in the West, I've seen them pretty big in the mountains.
Yeah.
Did you guys see any cougars or mountain lions?
Nope, didn't run across any of those.
They know better.
Yeah.
We've got our beards drawn out. Nobody wants to tangle with that.
Nobody wants that. Well, that's cool, man. That's a hell of a story. 4 for 4 on public land, first time out, DIY. Sounds like a great first Western trip. And hopefully people listening to this, they can kind of hear the inspiration and get out there and do it themselves. I think it's like what you guys did is something everyone needs to do. It just sounds amazing.
Yeah. The satisfaction of doing it all DIY was really what did it. I mean, I ended up shooting a really good deer, and you know, he could have been half the size or whatever, but just, you know, we did it all on our own and had a great time with our family. But it was definitely a lot better experience doing it that way. You know, we could have hired an outfitter and kind of had our hand held or something, but that was, for me, what the best part.
Yeah, to me, when we go to the little restaurant drinking hole, you know, we're the four of us are walking in covered in mud, blood, and cow shit, and the rest of these guys are in their brand new camos talking about how they saw some deer from the road, and we're all just kind of sitting there keeping quiet, drinking our beers and just kind of smile at each other and be like, yeah, we did that on our own.
Yeah. That's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. Well, cool. Well, great story, guys. Appreciate you coming on, and we'll see you here just in a few months at the ATA in Louisville.
We'll be there, brother.
All right, and there it is, another episode in the books. Big thanks to Joe and Jackson for coming on the show. Love you guys. You guys are my friends and appreciate you coming on here. Can't wait to see you in a few months at the ATA. But man, that was a cool story, wasn't it? I mean, for them to go out with, you know, basically no knowledge, never been out there before, do it yourself, public land, and to go 4 for 4 on mule deer bucks is pretty amazing. That doesn't happen very often. And that's why I had him on the show. I just had to hear the story. Hope you guys really enjoyed that. It's something that's inspiring. And, you know, for them to go out there and share that experience with their fathers, it's just, that's what it's all about. I mean, to go out there and, you know, have success on one deer or four deer, but that time spent afield and the memories that they've made is something that they'll be able to kind of, you know, pass down and cherish for the rest of their lives. That's really cool. So again, congrats and hats off to Joe and Jackson. I hope you guys go out there and do it for yourself. Whether it's Montana, Colorado, muley, whitetail, pronghorn, elk, it doesn't matter. Just go do a trip. I can't stress that enough. It's seriously the best thing you can do. Whether or not you kill anything, who cares? It's something, it's an experience and memories made. So Yeah, hope you guys like it. This is episode number 30. I can't believe I've done this. This is going on over a year now, and I'm still getting lots of good feedback. People sending me emails saying they love the content. So we're going to keep doing this. I'm going to try to get into some more of the product companies, you know, gear podcasts as we kind of wind down off the season here and get more into the heart of winter. So look out for some of that stuff. I'll probably do one on my Oklahoma hunt. That was pretty cool. And I've got some hunting still left in the bag. I've got a late season cow elk rifle tag for Colorado. So we'll see if I can put a little bit more meat in the freezer. I've got three deer and wouldn't mind an elk. I'd be able to eat elk and deer and venison for pretty much any day of the week if I end up taking an elk down. So we'll see how that goes. But today's podcast is brought to you by Heads Up Decoy. Definitely check them out. Lightweight, portable decoys, elk, deer, pronghorn, turkey, mule deer, and whitetail. So check them out at headsupdecoy.com. And that is it. Before you go, make sure you subscribe to the Sportsman's Nation Big Game feed. That's where Transition Wild Podcast comes out every 2 weeks. So make sure you subscribe to that. You can go to sportsmansnation.com. You can go to Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play. Leave a review. If you like what you're hearing, leave that review. It would be much, much appreciated. Check out transitionwild.com. I still got the Colorado Beginner Elk Hunting Guide. So if you're starting to plan for the following year, that's a really good resource to go and get. All you have to do is give me your email. I won't spam you. Just give me your email and I'll send that to you for free. All right. I have went on long enough. Hope you guys have a great rest of your day and we'll talk to you soon.